Spiritual Practice, Part 2, by Swami Suryadevananda. Before we begin, let us review the main points of what we covered the last time. The 8 points or instructions that we covered the last time were: study the scriptures daily. Not so much the scriptures, but through the scriptures, study yourself daily. Perform your duties expertly. Worship God through selfless action. Detach the mind from desire-motivated action. Destroy all sins. Reflect over the defects in sense pleasures and life cycles. Have a firm resolve to attain liberation. And leave your own house. These 8 are preparatory to entering the spiritual path. Let us continue. The second stage, in transition. The next 8 instructions focus on what the seeker should do after leaving the house till he gets himself initiated by his own guru. 9. Resort to good company. Change. Today, we consider people wise and successful in a very different way. Earlier, the moral fiber and character of a person carried more weight than tangible accomplishments or their capacity. Now, the lines between what is considered moral and not have blurred considerably and have been politicized. I've heard it said that one must keep with the times and be progressive. But the goal of life has not changed and will never. What causes suffering to others and oneself has not changed and will never. We may think that there is this increased sense of hostility in the world, but hostility, my friends, is in the hearts and minds of the individual who sees inner cultivation as a personal, discretionary consideration. Satsang. Company of the good. Not good at this or that, but those who are inherently good. Whether adversity or good times knock on their door, their answer or response is the same, as goodness is not seasonal or conditional. We are especially nice to those who are near and dear, sort of casual to those who are just familiar, and cool to frozen to those who are other. We do not see that when we have these different responses, the seeds of these responses reside in us. I cannot brush you off in indifference unless indifference resides in me. Now just think, if we have quite a few not as good responses in us, we have not so good in us. Is all this necessary at all? Why does it matter if you or any other choose to be one way or the other? Do I need to reply in the same language? Do I need to drop to the same level? If I am at all serious about spiritual ascent, these must be let go, as with them, I flow the opposite direction. Inner goodness. So, how to change these inner currents which vehemently prompt behavior that is not conducive to my aspiration? We know how to change things outside and even smile when we are fuming. But to change how we feel in a permanent way is quite a different thing, as now we are talking about changing being or who we are and not conduct or what we do or put on for display for others. It is here that the company of the good, the truly good and wise, not wise at doing this, but wise as in wisdom. Those who themselves tread the path or have trodden the path becomes necessary, just as one candle is lit by another. They are good not socially, but inherently and naturally, and this goodness can take any shape. Mere smiling and outer pleasantries does not mean they arise from goodness. There could be some serious calculating going on beneath the pleasantries. And at the same token, firmness in response does not mean that there is non-goodness or non-love. It is also part of goodness too. For example, if I know someone is tempting or baiting me towards some mischief, and it is part of their makeup, I can tell them firmly not to come here again, and that's that. We must see goodness flowering in a very tangible way to know its value deep within till lasting change comes about. 10. Have unswerving faith and devotion to God. Faith. When you are in the company of those who are devoted to God as the all-in-all, or omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient, the feeling will catch on. You will see that their faith comes from a wholehearted embrace of God's omnipresence at root level, and with this, all cares and worries drop away. Their unflinching faith is not something they do, but just who they are, so it stays steady in every climb and situation. This gives one tremendous strength and zeal for sadhana, or spiritual practice. On the same note, those who worry a lot have not enshrined that feeling in their heart. Unflinching faith in God's omnipresence is proportional to the degree of acceptance of God's omnipresence. The energy we spend in trying to make things happen, which are not our lot, is proportional to the amount of worry we experience worrying about. There is a difference between doing our very best at every moment and worrying. The worrying mind cannot do its best because its energy is channeled into worrying, and this blocks one's own effort. They block themselves. This happens in life and in spiritual practice or sadhana as well. In life, as well as one's spiritual sadhana, there is a difference between being vigilant to see what needs to be done or needs to be adjusted or needs to be changed, and whether to stay the course. With vigilance, the focus is on ourselves, whereas in worrying, the focus is always external. Vigilance never causes worry because it sees worry, knows it to be a habit of the mind that must be exhausted, and therefore watches it rise, stay, and fall, exhausting its residual energy by not entertaining it further. Now let's talk about devotion. To stay vigilant, one needs to have steady faith in God's omnipresence, and with this, one becomes devoted. Feeling affectionate towards higher ideals, but not willing to let go of the lower, erodes faith and disallows devotion. You can make every action one that strengthens faith and devotion if you sincerely feel that you are offering it all as worship of God. As we discussed earlier, it is one thing to say, God, I offer these actions to you, without acting wholeheartedly or also offering part of what comes as remuneration to God in the form of charity to those struggling for the basics of life. If you don't do these, you're still holding on to a part of the actions within you. For this, the mind must be observed relentlessly. This kind of observation is deepened in meditation, and the heart, when freed from the grip of personality, is free to give itself in devotion to the Lord. 11. Cultivate and practice the six virtues. Necessary. These six qualities are what the mind needs to stay steady in one's abidance in the feeling of God's omnipresence. The opposite of each one of these is a window from which the warm air of sitting by the fireplace escapes and the cold air from outside enters. Let us see what these are. Shama, or serenity, or tranquility of mind, is the first. Dhamma is self-restraint, or sense control. It is the second. Uparati is cessation from worldly-oriented activities, and it is the third. Note, we didn't say worldly activities, worldly-oriented activities. Titiksha is fortitude or power of endurance, and it's the fourth. Shraddha, unwavering faith in God, Guru, the scriptures, and Atman, or the innermost self, is the fifth. And Samadhan, a mind fixed on God, or the self, or Atman, being the sixth. These six, my friends, are called the sixfold wealth or Shat Sampat. Wholeheartedly. When a farmer cultivates the soil well, which includes all he has to do on his side, a good harvest will be more than likely coming. I say more than likely because there is always room for obstructions in nature. Similarly, there are ways we too can get obstructed, but we have to do our part wholeheartedly and without remission. Wholeheartedly is to have all of one's energy and heart on the path. Not all one's energy in our sadhana only, but our hearts too. We must really want God more than any other want, to the point that the mind is always fixed in God's remembrance. And without remission means in an unbroken flow of God's remembrance. There are many ways to help with this thought current. The easiest is to develop the habit of repeating the mantra and aligning it to one's breathing. The mantra is stretched to the natural rhythm of one's breathing, and the mantra is repeated silently, once while breathing in and once while breathing out. If the mind is boisterous, the image of our personal deity is fixed in the heart space where the mantra is repeated to the rhythm of one's breathing. Do not underestimate the power of this simple practice, and do not overlook the utility and value of holding the image along with the mantra. You may have to take on other auxiliary practices like trataka or gazing for fixed periods so that you enshrine the image in your heart, and I've talked about that in other talks. You can read more about these and how to cultivate them in Swami Shivananda's book Sadhana Chatushtaya, published by the Divine Life Society, Rishikesh, India. 12. Renounce all desire-motivated action. Difficulty. It is difficult to reduce our involvement in outer action until a new inner current or pathway has been created. This, my friends, is what the practice of japa, or repeating the mantra aligned to the rhythm of your breathing, will do. This drains the energy out of existing thought patterns and makes increased vigilance possible. With this, We can avoid self-centered action and learn to do what needs to be done because it needs to be done. This bounces back and weakens the ego. So you start a better way of perception, action, and result, which does not add to existing conditioning and selfish interests are taken out. Now, vigilance. Without this inner renunciation, outer renunciation will be difficult to impossible, as the inner pulls the outer. This is why one must sustain a steady level of vigilance so that before any action, mental or physical, one's motivations are clearly seen. Always examine your motivations. If vigilance is relaxed for those considered near and dear or kith and kin, it will be like having a pot for water with holes in it. It will not hold water. Unless you give the mind a new thought current or an expanded way of thinking and feeling, it will not let go of its self-centered ways. See, my friends, these are not two things that need to be tackled, this first and then the other. They work together. Start new ways and don't look back. The spirit pervades all, and the spiritual life requires all your focus. Now a little on false fears. There is a fear among many that this will fall apart or that will fall apart. It may, and you are not the cause of them falling apart, so don't try to hold things together. You are doing what your deepest wisdom and inspiration feel should be done, and you have ascended several steps in the spiritual ladder in earlier lives, the momentum of which calls you now. How will you answer the soul's call? We have gone through many lives, and in each, people and things have fallen apart before, during, and at the end of the journey. The finite, my friends, must end. But nothing goes away. Everything comes back again to continue. In the Kathopanishad, the Master Yama gives us a beautiful example in saying that it is like a pot with water and rice that is boiling in it. The rice goes up and then back down and keeps repeating. The rice does not have an option, my friends, to get out on its own. But we do. Only now approach the Guru. Exert thyself. Swami Venkateshananda writes, "The teacher, sage, or guru is not a porter who is going to carry your bags around or please you." This is very true. Through your own sincere efforts, you have clearly seen that staying the course as is not tenable, as it is a downward spiral and a new path must be cut. Status quo should not be acceptable, as you should have seen by unrelenting vigilance that it is a dead end. You should also feel that a new way must be found that veers out of this trap, and feel ready or be ready to do it. It is at this stage that one approaches the Guru. Shankaracharya echoes this same sentiment by saying, "Only now approach a Guru." A new you. By now, you should have lost your taste for unexamined living and wholeheartedly want a way out of this path, but it does not appear very clear. This is especially true today. You would have come to the stage by your own study of scriptures, your study of life, spiritual practices, and cultivated the qualities that are necessary for the march forward. You cannot go forward if your boat is anchored and tied to the dock. Approaching the teacher or guru before you have developed this new base is a sure invitation for disappointment. 14. Serve the Guru. Selfishness. In service, you learn to do something to the very best of your abilities without your own filters of my way, this I like, or this I don't like. This new current of action is what the Bhagavad Gita also talks about in saying, do what needs to be done wholeheartedly because it needs to be done. Not what I want to do or how I want to do, but what needs to be done and to the best of my ability. Friends, mostly we thwart action by the filters of selfishness or what we expect or estimate might come. While moving forward, we have our eyes on the horizon. This is like planting a sapling and then pulling it out each day, perhaps several times a day, to see how much it has grown. It will not survive. Selfishness is weakened by service, which is doing what needs to be done because it needs to be done. The reason for doing and not doing are taken out of the equation. Now just a note on the verse. The sandals mentioned in the original verse are not literal, but indicate what the teacher or guru stands for or stands on. When we practice the principles he stands for and the platform he stands on, which are the same, which could well be the work that he does, we find our own inner platform or stability and discover how to do what needs to be done as yoga or without the involvement of the ego. This dedicated selfless service is not so much for him as it is to help us find our own way, a way to do what needs to be done without the ego. This is very important as you may be alone later for your deeper practice, and all research must be done now before setting out on your own. 15. After serving the Guru, inquire about Brahman. It is necessary. There has been considerable misunderstanding about this verse. We live today in an entitlement society. The ancients knew that if the student, the seeker, did not rise to a certain level on his own or her own, which is to cast aside his I, me, mine personality by universalizing his outlook, teaching Vedantic truths about absolute monoism would be nice ideas shared for casual conversation. Service to the Guru mentioned here is not like a down payment of sorts before he is pleased, so to say, and teaches. It is a period of attunement which is necessary to loosen the ego and its ways. See, my friends, usually we do things we need or want and to our satisfaction. In service, one learns to do what needs to be done to the very best of our ability. Why? Just because it needs to be done. This doing for the sake of doing is the opening verse of the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Behind every self-centered action is the little self or ego which is very firmly embedded into one's psychological makeup. Now, attunement. The period of service is a period of attunement, where the student learns how to do what needs to be done wholeheartedly because it needs to be done. Not just to do, but to do very well. The little I, which insists on my and mine, gradually weakens by disuse and is replaced by a universal feeling in the fire of action as duty. because it needs to be done. Cultivation. In the path of Jnana Yoga, or the yoga of wisdom, or the way of wisdom, the qualifications are the highest because what needs to be done has no external support. Direct realization of the one single universal truth of things that one alone is the focus. The mind which has not been properly cultivated will conceptualize teachings and go about groping in the dark. The farmer cultivates the soil with tremendous care, knowing that nothing good will come about if this step is taken lightly. The crop will grow nicely if the conditions the farmer is responsible for providing are just right. In the second or the early stages, spiritual life is like farming. It is inner and outer cultivation, making things just right so that we can act on the teachings and knowledge. The inner part of I, me, and mine have to be emptied, as the same space within will hold universal ways of thinking, feeling, and acting. Later, this too will have to go as the manyness is squeezed out by oneness. 16. Hear the teachings with faith and devotion. For this, you have to really hear. To hear with faith is to hear in such a way so we act on the teachings heard. There is a big difference between blind faith and the with faith and devotion mentioned here. Blind faith is when you hear or read something and hope that what was heard comes to you. The faith and devotion mentioned here is one where the student is fully ready and enthusiastic about having the experience heard about himself. He knows there is much to be done and is ready to do it. There are no competing interests, as he knows what was heard was all-inclusive and more so the goal of life. See, my friends, we hear and read many good things, many things, good things, but somehow do not act on them, as what was heard was one good thing among many other good things that we are tied to, or one is tied to, and they may fall apart. We are afraid of this falling apart because something in us cries eternal, changeless, and this may not be so. Changelessness is the substratum of change. In it, change animates and appears as waves do in the ocean, which is calm at its depths. Change is an appearance, and calm is its true nature. Not the perfect example, but I think you can see what we are talking about here. Faith and devotion. The earlier stages of the disciple's attunement with the teacher is there to overcome this obstacle of hearing but not acting. Faith and devotion are the two rails on which the seeker will exert relentlessly till he has his own realization. As mentioned earlier, it is not just hearing with faith and devotion and then letting it be stored among other things we have heard. This is not hearing with either faith or devotion. There must be that level of hearing which is like a springboard to act, to verify, and to know for oneself. Detach, attach. Swami Shivananda calls this single two-sided action as detach, attach. Detach the mind from existing limited ways of perception and action, and engage it in broader ways. This is the crux of the problem for many seekers. They are enthusiastic about trying out the teachings, but hesitate or do not follow through in allowing the old and limited sense of self to fall apart. This detach-attach are not two actions, but one single double-sided action. When you drive north, you get further away from the south, so to say. When the boat goes out of the harbor, it leaves the dock. If the boat is not prepared to leave the dock, it will never leave the harbor. Towards making all of this happen, it is very important and necessary to lead an awakened life. New colored impressions should not be entertained, and existing ones should be weakened and let go. When you are completely on board the train of change, this is possible. When you never leave the dock, it will be a struggle at the harbor at best. Satsang, or company of the good and the wise, and we have spoken about this earlier, is an important factor in promoting this change. Satsang need not always be in the physical company of others. When you wholeheartedly take up a scripture for study, you are in the company of the author by his ideas expressed in writing. To be in the company of the good and wholesome and conducive to your aspiration is one way to let go of the old shores. Friends, today we have talked about the second verse, which, just as the first, had 8 major points. And let us cover these. Resort to good company. Not good company in terms of my friends, but company that promotes goodness. Unswerving faith and devotion to God. Unswerving is having it reflect in our thoughts, in our communication, in our action. Cultivate and practice the 6 virtues, and we have gone over them. Renounce all desire-motivated action. Only now approach the Guru. Serve the Guru. After serving the Guru, inquire about Brahman. And lastly, hear the teachings with faith and devotion. Friends, thank you for joining me today in this second session of the series Spiritual Practice. To download the video, audio, or PDF handout of today's session, kindly visit suryadevananda.org. Thank you.